You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
I have an incredible guest today, so I want to get right to it. Michael is going to share with you his story of recovery, his story of a lonely kid here in Evansville, Indiana, that just, you know, went to the drink because he didn't see any other way to get out of the hell that he felt he was in. So I'm going to turn it over to him. My family is in town, Alan and Lenny, and they are celebrating recovery with us this year as well. Hello to them. And Michael, please share your story with the community. We need to hear from you. We need to get your hope and hear your experience. And please, anybody that wants to call in, feel free to 424-1400. Nothing's below the belt. You call us. Michael and I will try to figure out an answer or a way you can get an answer. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good to see you. Good, good. Happy New Year for sure.
Happy New Year to you and everyone out there too.
27 years of sobriety.
And that's a blessing.
Yes,
a
yes.
Blessing. From whence that came, I tell you, it was a rough time.
Yeah, yeah. You had said you grew up here, Glenwood, Bossy. Yeah,
yes,
tell us
yes.
A little about yourself.
Yes. Well, I tell you, when I was a kid, I was a very lonely little boy. But I had a lot of love inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the way, that love just disappeared in me. And as I was coming up, I had a lot of problems with the kids making fun of me and hurting my feelings and dysfunctional family and a lot of bad things that took place. And I just stuffed a lot of things down, a lot of things, a lot of hurt feelings, you know. As I got older, found something that would relieve me of that pain. And that was drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then once after finding that, it seems as though I didn't have to deal with all the problems and things. They seemed like it just kind of went away, but they didn't.
Do you think you said your father went from like a preacher
right.
to a pimp?
He did. My father was a pastor at a Baptist church. And I recall as a child going to church and listening to him preach. And back in them days, when I went to church, I never did feel like I belonged. I never did.
Hmm.
You know, and back in them days, it was really fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
You know? And so it made it very hard for me to fit into church. Later on, my father changed, and I didn't quite understand what was taking place. Later on, I found out that my father became a pimp and stuff. And
was that
was really
because
hard.
Of drugs?
It could have been, you know, because he dealt in drugs and stuff and alcohol as well.
My goodness, your life really changed.
It did. It really did. It made it very confusing
yeah.
for me as I was coming up, you know. But these are things I stuffed down, you know.
Sure.
And like I said, as I got older, you know, the insides of me just didn't feel right, and I didn't feel like I belonged nowhere,
mm.
you know. And like I said, I come from a dysfunctional family,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel like anybody understood me.
Yeah,
you know. And it was very hard for me to tell anybody what was going on with me because I didn't have anybody I really could trust, you know, to tell these things to. So I walked around in misery and a lot of pain, a lot of hurt.
You think a lot of kids do?
Yeah.
Still feel alienated.
Still feel, yeah, they do.
Especially a man.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, boy, where do you go?
Yeah, you put on that mask, that fakeness,
mm-hmm.
you know, but your insides are hurting, you know, and the pain is there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one that you feel that you can turn and talk to about these things, you know, until, like I said, I found drugs and alcohol to try to fit in, you
sure.
know, because I didn't feel like I fit in with no one.
Sure.
You know, but once I found that, for some reason, it made me feel like I belong, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Or you didn't care if you didn't
right,
belong.
Right, yeah, yeah, I didn't care,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
All of a sudden, I felt like I was somebody.
What a freedom for a kid.
Yeah.
To have a drink and all that go away.
Right, yeah, you know, and at that time, you know, it was partying time. I come from a hippie time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we were hippies, you know, and stuff. And, you know, I started drinking at the age of, like I said, 14, and then got into drugs, you know, and I tried drugs and stuff, and pills and pot, and hung out with hippies and stuff and everything, you know. And and I thought that I was really fitting in, you know. But deep inside of me, I still felt like I was different, you know, very different than everybody. But for some reason, once I drank the drugs, you know, I just kind of felt like I fit in.
So did anybody see you going down the tubes with drugs and alcohol?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was very, very rebellious, very rebellious, and in such a denial that it was everybody else.
Everybody else's fault.
Right. Yeah. And I'd get angry, very, very angry if anyone said anything about my drinking or drugging, you know. And I, since I've learned that it, you know, that it was a progressive illness, you know, it didn't go backwards, you know. I found myself, it was really, for a long time, it was a, nothing but a party, you know. We just partied, you know. And then later on, I started doing things that I would normally wouldn't do.
Wouldn't much of the party anymore.
Right, right. Yeah. You know.
Embarrassing yourself.
Very embarrassing things that I would do, you know, that I'm not going to share on the air, but.
The imagination can go where it wants.
Right, right,
sure.
Yes, there you go. Sure. But I did a lot of things, and I would always justify them. Always justify them, you know. But I never wanted no one to tell me, you know, that it was due to my drugs or alcohol.
Right.
No. You know,
don't take that away from me.
Right. I always felt like everybody does this stuff, you know. And then I was always pointing my finger at other people, you know, talking about what they did, you know.
Right. Sure.
Stuff, you know, or I laugh off things, you know, that I did, you know.
So do you think you became alcoholic pretty quickly once you added alcohol to your life and drugs? Your addiction hit pretty quick.
I don't think that it really hit pretty quick. I think it gradually crept up to that point, you know.
Yeah.
Like I said, they say it's progressive illness, and it did progress, you know, because I had to have more.
Right.
You know, more. And looking back, I can see the Boone's Farm days.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And we drank.
You're
lots
talking
of,
late
yeah.
60s, early 70s.
Right, right, right. And,
is that stuff still around?
I don't know. I would not know, but yeah. I'm pretty sure they probably got something like
by
that.
By the bottles, huh?
Yes,
drink that
yes,
stuff.
Yeah. But in the difference was is that I think that it moved from partying with it to needing it, you know. Everywhere I went, I had to have something, you know. If I came to your house, or whatever, you know, I had to have it. You know, it wasn't a thing where I could just come someplace, have a good time without it.
Yeah, it went with you like an inhaler.
Right, yeah.
That's, needed it to breathe.
Yeah, that's what gave me the comfort. I could relax, I could talk, you know, whatever. When I didn't have it, then, you know, I just could not fit in or function at all.
So when did you start recognizing you were in trouble?
I'd say at the age of probably 19.
Really? Even into your adolescence, you
yes.
knew you were in trouble?
At young adult. 19, I started, I'd say really I became a problem alcohol, you know, a problem drinker and a problem addict or whatever you want to call it, you know. And I started abusing it very much, you know. And I started recognizing, you know, some of the traits behind it. Started seeing some things happen that was not quite, quote, say, normal, you know, things. And that it was actually starting to control me, you know.
And you knew it.
And I knew it. I knew that.
Did you still have that feeling that something was different in you and that this was... Drinking was your only survival.
Yes.
Even at the young adult years. That
yes. Yes.
So you knew you, there was a dependency, but you
right.
thought it was okay.
Right. But I thought that, yeah, that it was okay. I thought because everybody was doing it.
So do you think most addicts and alcoholics do for a long time think that their addiction is okay?
Right. They do.
It's a relief.
Right.
I need it.
Right. And I think because you don't know any better.
Yeah.
You don't really, you know. And I think that people have shared with us, you know, in that time frame, you know, and I've had I remember looking back, I had people from churches and stuff that would come to me, and I wasn't ready for all that, mm-hmm. you know. But I think that they were doing their jobs of trying to share with me, you know. But I couldn't see that, you know, because I just could not see that this was something that was out to hurt me or anything like that. You know, I thought it was helping me.
Sure.
See.
So what finally turned you around?
What actually turned me around was that I actually hit my bottom. It's what happened with this alcohol. Now, I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Yes.
And what happened was that I hit my bottom. My bottle had turned on me is what had happened. See, it no longer became my friend, no more, you know. And like I said, I had relationships and stuff with people, and I still say they, that they were hostages.
Do we have a caller? Is there a caller? Sorry, nope. Go ahead.
And all the hostages, I took in hostages and people, you know, to hold me up, mm-hmm. you know, back in them days. And I recall the last of my drinking is when I actually finally surrendered that it was no longer would do for me what it used to do for me, you know. And the more I drank and stuff, the more depressed to the point where I wanted to commit suicide.
So you'd gotten suicidal,
yes.
your alcoholism?
Yes.
You really were contemplating, oh,
yeah.
my.
Yeah, I was contemplating
as awesome
suicide.
As you are, Michael, I can't imagine.
Yes.
You wanting to die.
But it took everything it took.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
did. You know, it took everything that it took for me to surrender. I was like a wild horse that bucked, you know.
So do you think most alcoholics or addicts have to get to that place where they surrender, not suicidal necessarily, but a surrendering place where they're just sick and tired of being sick and tired?
I firmly believe that most of them do. They really do, you know, because we're very stubborn, bullheaded, self-knowledge people mm-hmm. that sometimes I believe that it takes what it takes to be broke, like I said, you know, a wild horse, mm-hmm. you know.
Sea biscuit.
Right, yeah, you know, to be able to surrender, you know, and sometimes they hit that bottom. Hopefully a lot won't have to get to that point, you know, to surrender, mm-hmm. you know. But if
And you went to rehab.
Right, yes, I did.
Was that hard for you to do?
I
go to rehab?
I tell you, once I got to rehab and I got there, you know, I was a little uncomfortable because I felt different. You know, I felt very different. And I'm not really talking on lines of alcohol or drugs, but I felt different.
Because being a black man, because
right.
of your lifestyle,
right.
your
My
sexuality,
lifestyle,
all of that?
Yeah, all these things, yeah.
That you didn't want to tell anybody.
Right. And I felt like if they knew these things, then they would not accept me.
Mm.
You know, and that's where I felt all my life was that you will not accept me if you knew
the truth.
The
yeah.
truth.
Yep.
You know, but then once coming into rehab, I was able to meet in groups and I was able to hear people share their stories. And I was amazed that I couldn't figure out how these people could know me.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about things and the insides of them that matched mine.
Mm.
You know, for the first time, people were talking about all the things that are in me that I had never shared with no one.
And you started to see you're not so different.
Right. Maybe. I started seeing that I wasn't so different on those lines. Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time, I still felt different about all these other things.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But I stuck with treatment, and then they made suggestions for me, you know, and went to a 12-step program. And I was totally amazed that there were a bigger group of people, you know, like me.
Yes.
The one thing, though, I did observe and see, and in those days, was that there weren't a lot of black people in these meetings. And that was one of the first things that hit me, you know.
There were a handful of black people.
Right.
And
yeah.
Not even a handful of gay people.
Right.
So, oh, my goodness.
They're, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that made it very hard.
Oh, yes.
You know.
You were different.
I was very different. Yes, very different.
But when you came to AA, they said, welcome.
Right.
We feel like you feel, even though you have some of these.
Right. And I had to put aside the black issues and things because I had to recognize by an old-timer sharing mainly that I was in a recovery program that didn't really center around what sex preferences or what color you are.
Right.
It was centered around recovery, you know.
And that is, I want you to, when we come back from break, to really talk about that transition, because I know that was big for you, to go from feeling different and unique to knowing alcoholism is everybody's disease.
Right.
So don't hold on to that thought. We just have to take a break for a commercial. So Tri-State, don't go away. We will be right back to hear more about Michael's story and his awesome hope of recovery.
Hey, yo, it's your man, Big Ticket. You know what it is. Are you ready for this? Join me every week for Live in the Den. We'll count down the top 20 joints of the week. But that's not all. Your favorite artist will hang out in the den with me every week.
We bouncing with Ludacris and my dog, Big Ticket. Believe that.
What up? It's Jay-Z chilling with my man, Big Ticket.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Beyonce getting crazy in the den with Big Ticket.
From the basement to the den, you're bouncing with Ush and my man, Big Ticket.
Holla back at that.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
When you have a cold, what causes your worst sinus symptoms?
My stuffy nose is caused by mucus, isn't it?
Well, the real problem isn't always mucus. It's often nasal swelling caused by inflammation.
No wonder I can't blow my nose.
The right medicine for the real problem is Advil Cold and Sinus. The power of Advil plus a strong decongestant that reduces nasal swelling and relieves sinus pressure.
So I can breathe again.
Advil Cold and Sinus, the right medicine for the real problem. And great relief for flu season, too. Look for it at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
What are the three most terrifying letters in the English language? IRS. If you have tax problems, the IRS can garnish your wages, drain your bank account, and more. But don't give up hope, because Ronnie Deutsch's law firm, Ronnie Lynn Deutsch, a professional tax corporation, can fight the IRS for you. Not available to New York residents. Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis and a free tax guide. Call 1-800-611-3064. That's 1-800-611-3064.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
We're back and having an incredible discussion. My friend Jane just joined as well, and we're just talking about how easy it is when you know there's things about you that are different than mainstream America, how that can really block you from joining in the Fellowship of the Spirit or joining in recovery. And Michael, tell us more about, I mean, how did a young black guy that knew he was gay make it in the program of AA that looked so mainstream and conservative to you probably when you came in?
Well, Lisa, I tell you, I had an old-timer share with me something, and I'm so grateful he did. He shared with me, he said, Mike, he says, you've got three counts against you. and sure enough, I firmly believe I did, you know. First, I'm a recovering, you know, person. And the second is I'm black, and the third thing, I'm gay. So it made it very...
Three strikes
against me, you know.
Wow.
And I'm up against a lot of people that are a little different in their thinkings on lines of blacks and gays. So I've been kind of like put in with a lot of people that don't normally mix.
Right.
You know, and here I come.
Michael Jackson right. in Evansville, Indiana.
Right, you know. And in all honesty, in the beginning, it was kind of rough for me because I had to endure a lot of criticism, a lot of talk, and it took a long time for me
Could you tell people were talking about you?
Oh, yes. And there were some people that would talk out loud.
Really?
Yeah. And it resembled when I was a child when kids made fun of me, called me sissy, called me all kind of names, and it hurt me so much. You know, still today I firmly believe that adults act like children.
For sure.
I really do.
And we don't have any excuse. Kids do, but we shouldn't act that way toward each other.
Right. And since I found out that everyone has something in their closet.
Yes.
All the difference is that I've came out of mine. So,
yes.
And, you know, when I came in the program, you know, I had to be taught that because I saw other issues way in front of my recovery that was more important. By me being black and me being gay, I thought those were the most important things. I know Tommy shared with me some things that my recovery had to come number one. It had to be first.
Yes.
You know? And so it took me a while to see that, you know.
Priority needed to
right,
be.
Right. And that when I was attending this 12-step program, that these people that were there were for the same reason.
Yes.
That they weren't there really to deal with their personal issues or even what they are or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this, that once I did step into this program, I found out there were some people that had some things going on with them.
Sure.
That, wow.
Don't bring it to these rooms.
Right.
Just don't drink. It'll get better.
You're right. Right. Yeah. You know, the program would tell me, keep coming back, bring the body and you know, the mind will follow, and welcome, and they extend their hands out to me, you know, we'll love you until you love yourself. Mm-hmm. And I kept coming back. You know?
And you've been so dedicated and always reached your hand out to anybody and everybody.
Yes.
So, is somebody, hello? Somebody on the air? Hello? I keep thinking somebody's calling in to ask a question, but why interrupt such a good flow going on here?
Yes. I think once after I started seeing that my recovery had to become first in my life, then I was able to, once I had a sponsor and some spiritual advisors in the program, I was able to share with other, you know, people these things that's inside of me mm-hmm. that I needed to talk about, you know.
And now you say you're in the ministry?
Yes.
And how does that fit in the 12-step? I mean, it should fit beautifully, the partnership
I'm
between...
I'm not an ordained minister, but the God...
You're ordained, all right.
Yeah, the new God of my understanding has chosen me to carry a message. And I had to come to a spiritual program first. I tried religion way back before coming into this 12-step program, and I had a lot of trouble with that, you know, fitting into religious program.
The formality of
right,
you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for all that.
Yeah.
You know, and I thank the new God of my saying today that I had a spiritual program he led me to, because I did not understand what spirituality was.
Well, you said your dad went from being a preacher to a pimp.
Right.
And that you were so confused. Do you think that affected the way you heard the word God?
Yes. Very much.
Sure.
Combined with, fire and brimstone. And once I heard all that as a child, I just knew that there was a God that didn't like me, you know, that didn't love me. After hearing the fire and brimstone thing, I had a very fearful God that I would not turn to.
Jeez.
You know. Today, I have a very loving and forgiving and understanding God of my understanding that has worked with me through the 12-step program. And has given me tools, you know, and steps that I, you know, was able to not only to learn, but to live by. Mm-hmm. And little did I know that he put ministers in front of me to teach me. And I became very knowledgeable of the New Testament of the Bible. And that these are things I had said to myself I'd never do. I would never read the Bible. I don't want to go to church because they're hypocrites.
Never say never.
And,
huh?
And I found out I was the hypocrite.
Oh.
And I found out that people go to church because they're not well. They go to church because they're still sick.
Yeah.
Once I stepped back into the church with an open mind, then I was able to see that I belong, you know, that I belong as well. But that was on the God of my understanding, this time people, not mine, you know.
What about, how do you deal with people that don't have that same religious connection that you do? What if they have a different religion
or no religion at all?
Can you still minister to them?
Yes.
Even if the
yes.
New Testament isn't
yes.
something they want to hear
right.
about?
Right. I think that for me, that the God of my understanding had a plan for me. And he slipped it under without me knowing it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that he did. But I think that he worked with me on spirituality first,
mm-hmm.
to get me in preparation for religion, so that not only in my 12-step program am I able to carry a message, but to take it outside of the 12-step program and carry it other places, you know. And so I'm able today to carry that message by the God of my understanding, putting teachers to teach me about spirituality, teachers mm-hmm. to teach me about religion, and combine those together. Because wherever I go, I can be able to communicate with
at
people
that level.
On the level that they will understand. In
and
a
maybe
spiritual.
The churches need to hear more about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, maybe right. we all need to carry a message to our synagogues and churches.
Yes, yes. I think that my own personal feelings on those issues is that I think that what I was taught was having an open mind.
Right.
And I think that if, for example, churches or ministers had an open mind to say that, let me look into this.
Mm-hmm.
With an open mind to see how this works, you know.
Yeah, we were talking before the show. If you read the big book, it's all about God.
It is.
And
about
a power,
God, right.
a power greater than ourselves,
right.
for sure.
Yeah. And I just think that, you know, sometimes I think today I think church is a great thing for mm-hmm. me. I think it's a great thing. But I did not think that away back years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's baby steps.
Right.
You know, that I think everybody become knowledgeable of things that will work. You know, I have a God in my understanding today who says, you know, what works, it works.
And you love your sobriety.
Yes, I do. Yes,
it's
I do.
Obvious.
Very, very much.
Always when Michael enters the room, it lights up. For sure.
I always say thank God because
yes.
I would not be where I'm at if it hadn't have been for the God in my understanding directing me and guiding me. You know,
so what can we do to reach out in radio rehab in our circles of people, no matter who they are, what color they are, what gender they are, what sexual orientation, whatever? How can we reach out and do better at helping people find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous?
Well, Lisa, like I said, you know, that I believe that an open mind and our ministers and our priests and preachers would have an open mind to other programs. Mm-hmm. And
talk about it from the podium a little more,
right.
maybe. Or
at their podium, incorporate that in their ministry
mm-hmm.
to say that this is not the only thing that will work for this individual or that one. But let's utilize all of it.
Yeah.
You know, let's not leave anything out. Or, you know, let's incorporate maybe this 12-step program. Let me investigate into this. How does this work? Is there a book that I can read that's mm-hmm. on these lines that will tell me more about this individual, you know?
Yes.
And become knowledgeable to be able to say, okay, to this individual, fine, okay, we have this book, but right now I would like to see if you could probably fit into, try this,
mm-hmm.
this program, and see if this program works for you.
Well, maybe for 2010, we all need to go outside of the rooms a little and help people understand where we are, what we are, how people can get to us.
Right, yeah.
Sounds like a good resolution.
Yes. Yeah. And it does work, too.
Yeah.
It does work, you know.
Sure
I believe
does.
That it filters us into religion, you know. And because I know for myself it did, you know, I have been filtered over into religion, but I was not ready back then.
And you know, you can see the people in the rooms that have faith and the ones that still struggle with faith. The religion, but the people that have faith do seem happier.
Right.
They just know that everything's happening for a reason. They believe it'll all be okay.
Right. Yeah. They have faith.
They're the happy, that faith. Exactly.
It's called faith.
It's key.
It is, you know, and I think that, you know, spiritual programs are any type of spiritual, I say religion or whatever, you know, and if it works for you, then I'm so glad that it does work, you know, because my God says I work all over and everywhere, you know.
And for us, we don't have to pick up a drink or drug today.
That's right.
Wow.
Right.
What a miracle.
Isn't that wonderful today? So, we don't have to.
So how can people find you if they want to, for 2010, make a resolution to quit drinking or drugging? I know they can find you. Alcoholics Anonymous is everywhere. There's about 150 meetings a week now in town. Yes. Is there
you
any other way?
You can find me at CNL.
That's Columbia and Linwood.
I'm there all the time.
That's right.
All the time.
Look for Mike.
Yes. And we are hope.
Hope. Hope dealers, not dope dealers.
Right, right. We give hope, you know.
That's right.
We don't care who you are, what color you are, if you're gay,
where you got
straight,
off on the elevator.
Whatever, you know, you're welcome. My God has opened his doors to the people that other people have rejected.
Yeah.
And our doors are open. We welcome you because we're just like you.
Well, thank you, Michael. You are awesome for 2010 to kick this off with a year of hope for recovery. Radio Rehab, I hate to end. You can hear Michael on www.lisasifecares.net on the World Wide Web next week. You can call here at the pump, WEOA, and contact Michael or me. If you have questions for Jane, any of us that are involved in the radio rehab world are willing to answer your questions and find you so that you can find us. Between now and next week and the rest of this year, don't forget to do the next right thing.
WEOA, Evansville, Henderson.
One bite from McDonald's Big Mac sandwich and your taste buds are in for a thrill. Transported to a sweet and safe.